Right here. There we go. All right. Well, Max, if you want to go ahead and take the floor, and just for those on the phone call, if you want to bring up that email I sent out with those pictures or the social media posts that have the pictures as well, I think we'll probably be using them at some point, but it's all up to Max.
All right, well, good evening, gentlemen, and if there's any ladies on the phone, good evening. I'm sure people will come in here at 8:05 or so. I remember last time I think we started with a little crowd, and then as the times went on, it kind of accumulated, so that's fine. So again, we are I'll introduce myself again, Max Cruz with Cudesso Roofing out of Massachusetts. We are trying to host this conference call just to talk about general business organization, and it's more an open forum about what's working in your business. I have made some drastic changes in our business, and it's really every day everything just something better happens. So I can personally share with you guys that whatever little changes we have done so far have are bringing in huge results for us. And I think 2016 is just going to be an awesome year for us based on everything we're looking at and all the estimates that we have going out and the motivation of our crew and everything else that's happening. But again, what I like to say is about a year ago or so, I read the book called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. We've shared this in the post. It's you can listen to it on your cell phone as you're driving. And it just talks about changing your mindset and how you run business. So the first call we had in December, we talked about the three levels: the entrepreneur, the technician, and then the manager. And then essentially that's how all three personalities are within us as business owners. And sometimes we try to do all three, and that's where you start to, kind of drop those balls when you're juggling so many things at once. So the mindset is important on saying, hey, I'm the entrepreneur, I'm the one that has to be leading my team. And this doesn't matter if you're a one person company with one or two guys just helping you here and there as you're growing your business, or it doesn't matter if you are a huge company that's, you're the CEO and you have, administrative staff and 20 employees and five different crews that are covering all these roofs for you. At any point in time, you can use any of these tools to restructure your business or reorganize your business to be more effective, more proficient at stuff. And again, all the businesses that are, huge corporations, they grow with this. And there's always adjustments that have to be made as the times change. So that being said, when I first will start, I sent out two pictures. I was going to share our company organization chart, but we have some proprietary information in there, and I think it's going to be beneficial to you as the business owner to really develop your own, and then you'll really see how you can drive your business and what changes you make. If you have Microsoft Office, if you pull up PowerPoint or Excel or Microsoft Word, right on the templates, you could search for business company organization chart or business organization chart. And right there, pretty much what you'll see is, a typical either circles or rectangles. They'll have a president or CEO on the top, then they'll have whatever the vice president and the CFO, chief financial officer, or some administrative assistant under that. Then under that, you'll see, technical stuff. So really is that mindset of saying, hey, I'm the guy that's leading all of the people here that are depending on me. I personally prefer the horizontal chart versus the vertical chart. That way, our staff is seeing that, they're part of the team versus, hey, this guy's on top. I need to, I'm all the way down here. What is it going to take for me to get all the way up there? And then, again, it's just a personal judgment call. And I've seen a couple of different ones where the CEO is kind of in the middle, and then everything kind of branches off. And those lines is kind of the direct communication route where, if and I don't mean any offense to, any of the employees or any of that, but if you're a company that you're the CEO and you have 30 people working for you, the guy that just started yesterday, maintaining your shop or is just starting putting on roof coatings, you know, if you have 30 other people that have job functions, this guy that just started shouldn't be coming to you saying, hey, you know, I don't have any steel toe boots. Can you hook me up with some? You know, that's something that when you organize your company chart, you'll see, hey, you know, this guy has a foreman or a supervisor. He should go to him. That foreman should communicate to, you know, whoever his inline superior is or however you want to do it. And then maybe that message gets to me. And then that's when you can really say, okay, well, you know, the company structure, when people come in, I'm already going to have a requirement that they need to have those steel toe boots so I don't lose, you know, making a process chart of all that stuff. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So, again, it's just what I'm saying is that there's a bunch of different organization charts, and it doesn't matter if you do it on a napkin in your office or if you do it on a lined piece of paper and then it develops over time. The most important thing that Michael Gerber talks about in his book is to have some sort of written plan, some sort of written path written down. So, you know, the day that you're out of work or if you have a partner, if you have multiple partners, they can all look at the same sheet and say, okay, we're all on the same page. We understand how this thing flows. And even if you're a sole guy, you know, it will help you develop your company and say, okay, this is how I'm going to make my company grow. And this is how we're going to do, you know, 20 roofs this year, 40 roofs next year, 100 roofs the following year, and this is everything I need to pull in place. So by that being said, kind of the two pictures that I uploaded that I wrote up was kind of when we started our company, that was my mindset of, you know, maybe organizing it this way. And then again, I've evolved to a much bigger chart now at this point, but I put some basic stuff just for you to think about and have it there. So when you're doing your organization chart, you can, you know, have something that you can go off. And then again, if you find something online, please share it with the rest of the group. If you already have something that's working for you, share it with, you know, if you want with other people, and we could all, everyone's input is valuable here. So the two approaches that I would say, and Michael Gerber mentions this in his book, is one, maybe you want to step back and take a look at your company and the services that you provide from an outside point of view. You know, the customers that you're servicing, what is it that they are expecting? And then the second one is maybe look at the existing forms and methods of the tasks that you're performing and the personnel and how they all fit together. So from there, pretty much like right now, if you are that one-person company and have two guys, you know, you go out and look at that roof, and then when you're ready, you call in your staff and you go out and you bang out that roof, and then you wait for the next project or however you organize it. But if you have that process written down, you know, you'll, again, those are the two approaches that you can take on making that organization chart. So on the first picture that I said, the one that said general, I have on the top the decision maker, which would be you as the owner of the company and any other partners that you have. For example, right now in our company, I'm the decision maker and my partner is also a decision maker because we're 50-50% owners. The difference is the items that we make the decisions on. You know, if he, you know, obviously if we're going to go out and buy a $60,000 F-350, you know, that's something we talk together. But if he's out on a job site and, you know, he needs to call a subcontractor, or, you know, our foreman reports to us that they need to call a subcontractor, that's something that I don't need to approve to go ahead and do. So, again, you could define what functions you yourself, and if you have any partners, what is it that you're going to do? For example, the situation I'm in, I'm mostly administer most of the office documentation, most of the office staff, some of the estimators and some of the project managers, and then he is more on the what I would call the executory. So he's the one that's going out there and communicating with the project managers, communicating with the foreman, you know, making sure that people are coming into work on time, verifying the timesheets that were done for the work. And then again, you know, when I have to look at payroll, I don't have to, you know, call one of my employees and say, hey, you know, did you really work out there? Because that's already something that we've defined. So the next one, I do have some administrative support. And if you listen to our December call, it talked a little bit about hiring employees and making that task sheet. So we just had a girl that started yesterday on Monday. And we had interviewed a few people and literally just with one day and everything that I explained to her what we wanted to do, I already had an organization chart of what she was going to do exactly, how the filings were going to be done, what she needed to put in place, who she needed to communicate. And literally within an hour, she was just in the office, you know, banging out files, getting things organized. And my communication with her was kind of minimal because I already told her exactly on paper what she needed to do. Obviously, when she comes in tomorrow, I'm moving to another portion where I'll train her on some other stuff. But again, when you have those job tasks defined and you know exactly what you want your employees to do, it's very easy for them. Just referring back to the Michael Gerber book, what you want to think about your business is almost like a franchise business. I'm not saying that you're going to go out and if you have whatever roofing company that you're going to build 50 roofing companies in all 50 states, if that's your vision, great. That, you know, I want to be on that level someday. But what I'm saying is what you want to do is you want to have literally just like the Subway, just like the McDonald's, every single thing is already planned out for you. How do you get the client? What marketing are you doing? When are you doing it? Who do you need for staff? How many employees do you need? What type of machinery do you need? When you have every single thing written down, if you die tomorrow, just in an extreme sense, someone can literally pick up your project manuals or pick up your operation manuals and just go with it like if you were never there. And that is when, you know, about 6 months ago when we started doing drastic changes to our business, you know, I found that I have way more time now for myself, way more time for my family, and my business is still operational. Like tomorrow, for example, I'll be leaving on vacation for until January 30th. And, you know, I'm not as worried as I was a year ago when we were a little bit disorganized and I was on vacation, but it was a working vacation. Now I can almost say, okay, well, if I don't pick up my phone calls on Friday, things are just going to move forward because I put people and systems and communication paths in place so I can almost step out of my business and let the business operate as its true soul thing. And again, for those guys that are just starting off, if you want to be at that level, then again, we have some great tools that all of us can pitch in with that. If you know, you're looking to grow your company and looking to reorganize, this is kind of a stepping stone on what you can work with. So getting back to the chart, underneath kind of my staff, what I have is my overhead department. And then there, you could either put it as departments or as functions, however you want to do it. But essentially, those are the people that are doing the administrative stuff, the filing. I have an accountant that, you know, comes in once a week that works with a bookkeeper that does that. You know, if once you grow into a larger company and you do have, whatever, 100 employees, you are going to need a human resource manager because there's a ton of, you know, insurance paperwork and health benefits and, you know, hiring and firing and all sorts of stuff that has to happen. And then, again, the really large companies, you know, they have their own legal department for, you know, drafting up contracts or any of those specific items. Then a separate department would almost be your acquisition department, which a lot of people think about as marketing. And then that divides into, you know, inside and outside sales. And I'm sure Jonathan, with his experience, can talk way more than this about than I can. But, you know, that acquisition department is kind of, you know, the marketing department that you have there, what, you know, what people you have in place that are doing lead generation or what tools you have in place, the estimating department is there, and then the project management department. And the reason that I, in my mindset, tied those two together is because I said, okay, well, it's great to get that customer and have an estimator go out and give them a bid price, but, you know, if my project manager doesn't know that this guy is bidding this roof and we got this bid and he's scheduling crews, you know, 3 weeks from now, and then also my project manager that has some financial responsibility doesn't know that this job is, you know, X, Y, and Z, and you know, we're doing extra spray foam insulation for,
you know, some walls that they're having troubles with, or, you know, they want to do half of their roof. For example, if you have a flat roof area, then sometimes there'll be a building that has additions that were done, and then they want to do, you know, just one section of the roof. If all that stuff isn't in there and your estimator is not communicated to your project manager effectively, then great, you got that $1 million project, but then when you give it off to your team, what do they go off? What information do they need? So that's why I have those two tied there together. The third one you'll see is kind of the execution department. So those are the people that are, you know, physically going out and doing work. And it's funny because when my partner and I got into business, we were both, you know, on job sites, doing stuff, banging nails, putting on drywall, doing the demo, doing the office paperwork, doing the bidding, you know, doing the customer relationship. And that's when you start to lose control of so many stuff. So, you know, I know it's hard to get out of that mindset if you are a contractor, if you have been a contractor, and you say, well, the work is going out and putting these roof coatings and going on to the next project. Yes, that's part of the work. But again, in the EMIS, that's exactly what they talk about. You're the leader of the company. You can hire people, you know, sure, if you're just starting off, that $30, $35 an hour guy seems expensive, and it can be. But if your vision is that a year from now you're going to be able to have two or three guys that are going to be running a crew for you, well, you want to kind of start thinking about that mindset and start thinking, okay, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to hire these guys and I'm going to work with them. And sure, you're going to have to work 60 hours, 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week between your estimating time, between roof coatings, between the office paperwork that has to be done. But then you could start to see, okay, well, you know, this job, we have 30% profit, so let's put this money aside. And then as the money starts coming in, then you can say, okay, I'm ready to hire this person that's going to be taking care of the phone calls or taking care of the estimating or whatever you want to take care of. But you've already defined exactly what they're going to do. So you're not just going to hire a warm body to come in and spend all this money, but they're not doing you any good because you don't have the vision of what you want your company to look like. And that's where in Michael Gerber's book, he says that, you know, a lot of the businesses, they go great for 3 years or 5 years, and then they fail because they just, you know, they're all disorganized all over the place. So, yeah, you're doing a lot of stuff, but people are just doing. There's no understanding. There's no flow chart. There's no nothing. So back to the executory staff, that's where you can have your foreman, your staff. That's where, again, I have the project manager that ties in because there has to be some communication between your project manager and your foreman. Your maintenance guys, your guys at your service shop, you know, the guys that serve the shop, the tools, whatever. So this is kind of one approach of how you want to look at. And then again, if you look up any, just Google business organization chart, you'll see a flow chart of, you know, the decision maker, the CEO, whatever you want to call them, and then all these different departments or all these people that are interconnected. And that's one way to look at it. So my second picture is the one that says starting small, and this is for you guys that are just starting small or you just have a few employees and you want to grow. Again, take your business and look at it from the outside point of view. I showed here six steps, and I'll read them to you. So the first one is you as the owner, decision maker, go out and do some marketing. You know, you print out some business cards, you print out some flyers, you go knock on some doors, you do that. So you answer some. The second one is, you receive the phone calls, the emails, the text saying, hey, you know, sure, I got your flyers, come out here, give me this bid, you know, let's go ahead and see what you got. The third one is you proceed with the job, you know, you measure, you present, you deliver a proposal, whatever you need to communicate the one to the client. Then the client says, okay, well, let's go ahead and do that job, so you execute the job. The fourth one, the fifth one is you collect the payment, however you structure it. And then the sixth one is, if you even have that, you do a quality control inspection, which, you know, the customer calls you back 2 weeks and saying, hey, you know, you did this roof coating, but there's this one area that is still leaking. Maybe it's a pitch pocket. Maybe it's a drainage pipe or whatever. But, you know, just put some quick hop or whatever it is. But then you have all these steps. So, you know, just really general, these are kind of the steps that we all do every day. You go bid a roof, you get the job, you know, you make the money, move on to the next one, so it just goes on. Now, the real benefit, and this is where I really get, you know, very happy is when you can step back and you could say, okay, well, this is all great, but now I'm going to look at it from a customer point of view. If I'm that, you know, auto dealer that has a million square feet of buildings, you know, like a Ford, a Chevrolet, or Buick, or whatever dealer that has a service department, and then they have two other dealers in this plaza, and then they're just a huge thing, you know, what do I want to see? And again, when you start thinking about that, they'll say, okay, well, yeah, it's great. I love to work for mom and pop shops, this the great mechanic that has a little 3,000 square feet, but man, I'd love to do that 100,000 square foot roof. You know, that's a goal that you can set for yourself, and that's how you're going to meet your numbers. But again, when you are dealing with mom and pop shops or just very small outfits, their business, the way they do business and the way that large other enterprises do business is going to be a little bit different. So it's important for you to prepare yourself with the right tools, whether it is the way you dress, whether it is your printed material, whether it is that stuff, whatever it is, just make sure you prepare yourself. Because I'm sure if you deal with a mechanic, and I mean, he's dirty all day, and he's dealing with trucks, maybe in his perspective, he'll want to see a roofer that comes out and has dirty jeans and has all that stuff, and that'll be perfectly fine. But I can tell you, if you show up to, I don't know, let's say the Dell company, or if you show up to La Quinta Inn, or just a huge corporation that has hundreds of facilities, and you show up as that, hey, you know, we're expecting that roofer, well, I'm sorry, you're not going to be competitive to all those other commercial roofers that are delivering a much neater presentation. So just make sure you know who your target audience is. How are you marketing them? What materials are you having? What kind of follow-up are you having? And when you really start to plan all this stuff, then you can say, okay, well, this is what we're going to put in place to have all these tools, to have all these marketing materials, and that's what we're going to do. So the second one is when you receive those phone calls, email, or text, the question is, okay, when you receive them, sure, when you're that one guy, you might be nice and courteous and be all formal and say the right stuff. But once you have a foreman working for you, once you have an estimator working for you, once you have 20 people working for you, you want to set a standard and you want to say, hey, when you pick up the phone call, this is what I want you to say. This is what I want you to introduce. Make those scripts for your people. Make those scripts for your cold callers that are doing the estimating. Say, hey, you know, call this guy. This is what you're going to say. I'm with this company. We've been in business for X amount of years, fully licensed and insured. We have this great product and service that we want to deliver to you. You know, whatever that script that you want it to be, think ahead of the customer. What is it that the customer wants? When you have all those answers, I can tell you almost 99% of the time you're going to make that sale and it's going to be easier for you. So the third one is the preparation. So when you say, okay, well, the customer gives me a call, I'm going to go out and meet with them on Wednesday, what do you need? Do you have all your presentation folders? Do you have all of your Conklin sell sheets? Do you have, you know, a right business card? Do you have the right ladder? Do you have the right inspection tools? Is the worst thing that you could do is show up on a job site and say, hey, you know, I just drove up here for an hour and my ladder is only 20 feet tall and your building is 35 feet high. I wish you would have told me. It's not the customer's fault. It's your fault. You didn't ask the question. That's when I'll kind of break off on this thing. If you keep on putting off and saying that this guy's fault is this guy's fault, well, you know, you can blame other people all day long, but the only one that's responsible for your own success is you. And I bet you that you care more about your success than anyone else. So focus on what you can do to prevent those issues from happening again. So ask those customers the things that you need. If you're running short on business cards, make sure you order them on time. If you need some more presentation materials, make sure you order them on time. So just be prepared. The next one is execution on the job. So, yeah, it's great. You know, you got this roof. We got to go and bang out this roof. It's going to take us 7 days. Well, if you're the client and you're that huge dealership, wouldn't you want to know a couple of days ahead of time that you're going to have 10 guys coming in and, you know, start to power wash your roof and get all this stuff everywhere? You know, what is it that the customer is expecting? Are they expecting someone just to show up and set up ladders? No, they want you for you to give them a call. So have that in there. Say, okay, well, my project manager is going to have this little note that if we're starting the project on the 13th of January, 7 days before, we're going to give the business owner the call, the decision maker a call, say, hey, you know, this is just a reminder. We're going to be setting up there on the 13th, and we just want to make sure you guys are ready for us. And again, if you're not ready for it, give them a week ahead of time and say, hey, you know, we had you on the calendar for the 13th, but we've had some really bad weather, so we're running a week behind, but we're giving you about a week notice to say, instead of being there on the 13th, we're going to be there on the 15th, or whatever the scenario is. So right away, you're already setting a different expectation for your customer, saying, hey, awesome, you know, this guy called me a week ahead of time and said that they were going to do that, and then he showed up at this time. It's way better to call and say, hey, I'm not going to make it this day a week beforehand, rather than calling the day before and say, hey, I had you on the schedule, but I kind of messed up, so I'm going to be 3 days late. You see how that expectation is completely different and how your customer is going to, you know, accept that completely different. And then again, that gives you the preparation. If you're going out there and you're talking with a medical distributor, or you're talking to a hospital or to some other facilities, well, you know, they have some sensitive timelines. So if they tell you, hey, you know, if your schedule needs to be right on point, make sure that you do everything in your power to say, hey, this client is really, really important. We can't not be late. This is the day that we have to do it. This is how we have to do it. Get all the information that you need and make sure you deliver on what you say you're going to deliver. The next one is, so back on that, the execution of the job, think about the people that you're going to need, the equipment that you're going to need, the materials you're going to need. You know, just remember, when we order stuff from Conklin, you know, sometimes you don't have that extra 5 gallon buckets of quick caulk in your shop. Maybe you should plan ahead and say, hey, you know, we always order 10% extra or 15% extra. Well, this time, this year, we went through a lot more quick caulk than we had because we got a whole bunch of repair jobs. You know, let's just order, you know, 5 more buckets of quick caulk and have that. And then again, if you're having a job that has some weird coating situation, you think you got to go through more, or the temperatures are just not working with you, or your sprayer tips are out of whack and you're wasting more material, just make sure you're ready for that, because the last thing you want is to be, you know, 5 gallons short of Puma XL, and now you got to wait, you know, 7 days to get the next truckload, and now you're behind with that customer. The customer isn't happy that you finished on time. So, again, plan everything out. And the same thing with the equipment. If you know that your sprayer isn't doing that good, well, you know, it's either time to clean it out, give it its proper maintenance, do all that stuff, and make sure you're on top of your equipment. So the next one is collecting payment. You know, you're going to have a certain set of contracts that you write out. Again, when you show up to that large dealership, it's going to be different than when you show up to that mechanic. The mechanic might give you 50% up front and 50% later, and he doesn't really care if you have a written contract, where if you show up at a dealership and you're saying, I want 3 payments, 30% each, well, the dealership is going to ask for your W-9. They're going to ask for your certificate of insurance. They might have a specific contract or a specific performance insurance that they want you to get. Make sure you're ready and you have all that stuff so you understand what the process is for the client. And again, when you show up and you say, hey, I'm dealing with a huge corporation, this is what they're expecting, you could say, hey, the day I present my bid, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, why don't I type up a little thing that says, I've been in business for 30 years, and right on there I put, we don't provide our certificate of insurance, but we put right on there, you know, we have general liability insurance with limits of $5 million from this company. We have workers' compensation insurance with $1 million coverage from this company. We have auto insurance with whatever, $100,000, and property damage from this company. So right away we're telling them, hey, we're telling you right up front who we work with. Same thing, I found that in my general contracting business, when I told the client, hey, we're a general contractor, but I use this guy exclusively for my electrical, this guy exclusively for my plumbing, I'm going to give you his emergency contact information. The client is like, holy crap, this guy just told me who he was going to use, and he gave me their emergency contact information before even starting the job. So again, you're over exceeding the customer's expectation, because the competition that's out there, and the guys that have been in business, I'm sorry to say, the competition that's out there sucks. Most of them aren't presenting like, you know, you can present. So it's very easy to go out and blow your competition out of the water just by knowing what the customer's question is going to be. The last part where we talk about quality control and inspections is, you know, wouldn't you want your client to say, hey, yeah, awesome, this guy completed the job, but, you know, he walked off the job and he never came back. Well, if you have a team in place and you say, okay, I'm going to tell my project manager that, you know, the last day that my foreman says he's going to be on that roof, I want my project manager out there. I want to make sure we go through the punch list. And before we do that, I'm going to have my estimator go out and just review everything on the estimate and make sure that the job site is clean and everything is done. And then a week after we're done, I'm going to have my secretary do a follow-up phone call, just say, hey, you know, do you love your Conklin roof? Did we do a great service? Are you guys happy with us? You know, we'd love to get a referral from you guys. And, you know, thank you for using our services. Right away, when you do that, you can say, hey, my customer is expecting a clean job site, so what do I need to do in order to provide that? My customer wants to feel appreciated that once I finish the job, they know that, you know, we appreciate their stuff. You know, guys, if you're going out there and you're doing a $100,000 roof and whatever, you know, a $20 gift card to that decision maker for a coffee or, you know, your local store isn't going to kill your budget. So, again, when you put all these things in place, and I'll mention this, that in our company, what we did is actually we looked into a referral service, and now what we're doing is for any referral, we're offering our customers three items. One, they can either get a Visa prepaid card for $100, they can get $100 to the restaurant of their choice, or they can get a $100 donation to a charity of their choice. And that practice have probably driven our referrals up by almost 30%. So that being said, there's very, you know, a lot of things that you can do in your business to generate more business. But again, what is it that your customer is expecting? Are you meeting your customer's needs? And with this stuff, I guess I'll just like to, again, end it saying just organize yourself, whether you're one guy looking to grow into a 20-man company or whether you're that 20-man company looking to grow into 100 people, whether you're doing $1 million in roofs or you want to do 10 million or 100 million, you know, the numbers, it doesn't really matter. What good does it do to you if you're doing $10 million in roofs if every single roof that you do, the customer calls and complains that the site is dirty? Every single roof that you do, you got to go back 6 months later and do quick call. Every single roof that you do, somehow some tools get lost. Every 6 months, your employees walk off the job or they have a fight or something like that. So having that organization and having that structure in your company and putting everyone on the same page and saying, okay, we are here in the roofing business and we're here for the long run. We're going to tell our clients that they can stick with us for the next, you know, 60 years, 100 years. We're going to be here to service their needs. And you tell all of your employees, all of your subcontractors, all of your, you know, we already have that from Conklin. Conklin promises that they're going to give us the best products that they can manufacture and it's going to be absolutely the best stuff. So we already have the product. So now, just make sure you get everyone else on the same page, organize them correctly, you know, try some things out. If you're trying some things out and it's working for you, please share with that stuff. Again, like I was telling Jonathan, the other book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, he talks about, you know, whatever you learn, when you share with people and you have to teach people what you know, it actually improves what you're doing. So believe it or not, 3 weeks ago when we had our first phone call, I made just some slight changes to things that, you know, I had going on, and it's already improving my company, and I've seen results of that this week. So if you're doing something and you want to share it, whether it's marketing, business structure, whatever it is, that's the goal of this phone call. And when you teach it to somebody else, you will see that you'll find out that, hey, you know, I'm talking about this stuff, and it's working for me, but now that I've mentioned this, maybe I can improve it this way, and you'll just see all these ideas blooming in your head, and it's just going to be a wonderful process that you're going to go through. So with that, I guess we'll open up the lines for comments, questions, and anything else people want to share.
Hey, this is Mike Gibson. I'm new to Conklin, and I'm operating down in Dallas. My question is, how did you develop the script that you ended up giving to your staff? Is it just something that you've developed yourself over time and just kind of put it down, thoughts on paper?
That's a great question. So you're talking specifically for my marketing when we do like cold calling stuff?
Yeah.
So for there, what I actually did is I just looked up online some general scripts, and you know, I'll tell you that part of my business is I'm also a real estate agent, so I work for now for Century 21. So we have some tools of some basic scripts that are available. But if you go in online, most of the stuff, I mean, you could search for you know, roofing sales script or some sort of script, and most of them will start off the same way, you know, be an introduction about, you know, a company or a service that you're providing or whatever the case is, and then just getting that thing. I think the more important question is, what do you want to achieve? Do you want a person just to go into an office and, you know, open up a yellow book and dial phone numbers, you know, till they die 40 hours a week? You know, is that your goal? So I think obviously we want to achieve customers. We want those cold calls to turn into customers. But then that starts to ask, okay, well, what customers do I want to target? If you're going to be targeting, you know, a Chevy dealer, don't, you know, you got to make sure that your script is going something like, hey, you know, how you doing? I'm calling because you know, our guy's got a Chevy vehicle or whatever. I mean, you don't have to lie, but something to get them interested in that conversation. And again, when you're talking to, you know, cold calling, I'm not an expert at all. So, I mean, right now we're only getting maybe 1 or 2% appointment settings from cold calling. I think the door sales is working much better for us, and also the mailers have worked great in the past. And then some of the internet marketing leads that we're doing are working out as well. So I would say is just develop that script to you as the business owner. If you were to call someone, you know, what would you say to them? And when you translate that message then to your employees and all that stuff, they'll see that, hey, you know, this guy's in the roofing business. He knows he wants to sell this roof. This is what he wants to say, and the reason he wants to say it is because he wants to provide that quality service. And when you think about this for, you know, a month or whatever, you'll kind of see those things. They just magically appear on your head, and then one day you'll have the exact script that's going to be unique to your company. And again, when you call out there to, you know, cold call with these clients, they're going to say, hey, yeah, this roofer just called me, but he was different from the other roofers. He told me, you know, this stuff, and I wasn't expecting to hear that from a roofer. So what I would say is maybe Jonathan can connect you more to an individual that has more experience with cold calling, and they can start you off. But again, the most important thing, what's your vision, and how do you want to communicate that to your customers? And then that will, you know, develop everything else that you have going on.
Okay, sounds good. And with your telemarketing company, is their main goal basically to set an appointment for you or one of your sales guys to go out and meet with the decision maker in person?
Well, correct. The way that we're doing it right now is, you know, we are focusing on, you know, we do have mailers that are going to be going out in the springtime. But before we send out those mailers, you know, I want to kind of shorten down my list, and I'm focusing, you know, let me step back. I'm about 30 miles north of Boston. So what we're focusing on is a specific town that has a lot of industrial parks, and we've identified through Google Maps and some other software, you know, businesses that have at least 10 employees and that the building square footage is at least 10,000 square feet. So before I spend money or waste money, better said, you know, mailing them, if I give them a call and then, you know, my secretary says, well, you know, let's take this guy off the list because they just got a new roof done a year ago, you know, that's how you could save those costs. But our main goal right now is, again, to introduce the Conklin products to the market and introduce the roofing service that we have. And then once they say, hey, yeah, you know, it's wonderful you gave me a call. I do have a leak going on, you know, then that them – they'll forward that information to the estimator, who then schedule a time, and then they'll go out there and meet with that representative and get whatever that is. So it's kind of to provide warm leads to my estimator so they can go out there so they're not just, you know, knocking doors all day long and not getting any results. So, again, that's when you start looking at your team and you're saying, hey, if I was an estimator and I wanted to work for your company and I was working for a commission, not payroll, but commission, how, you know, great, I can bring in $1 million of business, but how has the company rewarded me? And from a real estate perspective, that's why I moved to Century 21, because the previous company I was with, they weren't providing me with any of these. And I said, well, I'm bringing in all this business. They're still charging me, you know, 40% of whatever I bring in, and I'm doing all the stuff. So it's kind of a motivational factor to say, okay, when I'm not giving all the leads to my salespeople. That's why, you know, huge companies have what they call inside sales and outside sales, and usually those outside sales work for commission, and the inside sales are more of an hourly salary type of people. But it's almost like a motivational thing, and it's also, you know, again, that's where I think I'm going to put these systems in place, and now that I'm tracking everything, if I saw that we spent, you know, whatever, $5,000, $10,000 in the last 3 months, and all I got was one lead that turned into a job, then obviously that's not effective. I have to restructure and reprogram what my step is moving forward. So again, you do want to have some sort of accountability measures that you're measuring the results of what you're getting. And it's something that I personally, I don't remember how I got it, but I said, hey, I think it's important for us to start doing some cold calls and start doing that. And, you know, it's just a system that I designed, and so far we're getting some good results. Just today I was actually at a Chevy dealership for one of our guys told me to sign up for Home Advisor. I was kind of against it, but he said, look, you know, he did the numbers, and he said it's only $249 for the check-in. Let's just select the business categories, and if we get one lead throughout the whole year, the $249 plus the $65 lead fee, the $300 will be more than covered. And it's only been, you know, 4 weeks since we signed up. And just today I looked at a Chevrolet dealer that the building owner has over 7 acres of real estate that he owns in this town. So, you know, this $300 investment plus the time from that possibly earned this guy a huge commission on all these routes. Obviously, if we get them throughout the years, but also it earned us a lot of business that's going to come in.
Hey, sorry, I was on mute there, I think. Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks.
Did I understand correctly? Was that Home Advisor?
That is correct.
And how do they send like some kind of rep out that you basically sign some deal with, or how does that work?
Nope. So I don't remember. So they found the information, and then he had one of the salespeople with Home Advisor give us a call. And then I just had pretty much like a 30-minute interview with a guy on the representative. So they said, you know, we're looking for, I mean, they're lead generating stuff. So, I mean, they're signing up contractors left and right. You know, they're no different from Angie's List or one of these other lead service providers. But again, what there was nothing really that convinced me to go with them over somebody else. I think what was kind of interesting is this guy said, look, the way that they do it is they charge you per lead, and you could really, really filter what areas you want to focus on and what leads you want to get. So again, this town that we're trying to focus on that has a lot of these business districts will say, okay, well, you know, $249 for a background check isn't going to kill us. And then when they send us a lead, we can work on it. And again, my closing coverage with warm leads have increased almost to 50%. So I'm, you know, almost 50% sure that we'll at least get part of the work from this stuff. So when you're saying, hey, if I target only businesses that have 10,000 square feet or more, and I'm paying $249 for the initial background check, and then if they send me a lead, it ranges from, I don't know what it is, 35 to 85 or whatever it is. You know, this $300 investment, if we get just one roof, it's going to more than cover any of that stuff plus any other leads that they have. So I guess Jonathan could probably pitch in. I wouldn't go up and sign up for all the lead generating websites that are out there, because then you're gonna, you know, you could spend tens of thousands of dollars on marketing, but if it doesn't lead to anything, then whatever. But you know, try out different stuff. Talk to other people in your area. What are they using? You know, I recently talked to a gentleman, and you know, no one is doing the newspaper anymore, but he put his information, he's a residential roofer, but he put his information in there, and he hadn't done the newspapers in like 5 years. And I mean, just in the last 2 weeks, he's just been inundated with phone calls left and right. So sometimes the things that nobody is doing is where you want to be, if that's to get that business. So talk to the people that are out there, try out some different stuff. It is going to cost you some money. Sometimes you're going to lose and you're going to say, well, that was a bad $1,000 investment, but that's part of business. You know, the reason that McDonald's and Walmart and all these other people, they go on national TV and have all these advertisements and print mailers and all this stuff, is because they know that it works. It brings in customers. I'm sure they're not a very high effective rate, but they're bringing in customers some way, somehow. So, you know, find out, try different stuff. Don't go out and spend tons of thousands of dollars. Talk to different people. I think other individuals, they've gotten great things from just doing cold calling or just knocking on doors and getting little flyers made up with their company information. And that might work great for you in your area. It just depends what region you're in, and how people in your region like to receive that communication. Somebody still likes to get that printed material versus just look up a company online. But once you start growing, the more places you have your name out there, the more credible you start seeming to people. And that's when you can say, hey, yeah, we did that job for that guy. And, you know, we found you online, and you have this great referral from somebody else. You know, you start to build that reputation in your area that you're the guy that they want to go to. And again, that's how you start blowing the competition out of the water, because you start seeing that all these guys just aren't doing those things. And it kind of blows your mind. And I laugh about it because, again, you just, we have so much competition here. I think there's over 1,900 commercial roofing contractors, but they're all focused on replacement. They're all focused on new construction. They're all focused on, you know, EPDM, you know, fully adhered stuff. Nobody in this area is doing the, they're providing a viable solution to the business owner that's less expensive than doing a full replacement. So I'm kind of in a market where I wish I had more competition, because when I go out there and I sell the Congruent system, they're saying, well, you know, how come nobody else is doing that? And that's when I have to say, well, we've done, you know, 20 projects last year, and these are my references, and we're part of Choice Roof Contractor Group, and we have, you know, billions of square feet across the U.S. that's applied, and anything that you can mention. So, you know, that's part of the great advantage of being part of this group, and it helps us make that sale.
Right, and I think another thing that you can share with your customer also is that most people that start out in the coatings industry, some of them tend to kind of shift over to doing more like single plies, like we offer with, like, you know, Flexion, because they have a problem retaining their employees in off season. So it takes a great structure in, you know, and I think you've got that figured out pretty much. But, you know, for some, you know, smaller companies, they have a hard time keeping their guys busy through the winter. Whereas with single plies, your window for, you know, applicating your system and putting your systems down, you have a little bigger window. So some contractors would rather be profitable and make money than they would offer their customer the best solution. So I think, like you said, we do have a niche. And the way it sounds, it's too bad that you informed us that there's 1,900, you know, contractors in Boston, because I think everybody on this call is just getting ready to move to Boston. So we probably changed their mind now. Just kidding.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you talk to anyone in a large city, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, when I talk to Sam and he's driving 800 miles to do his job, and I could drive 5 miles and have, you know, I don't know, 2 billion square feet of rubber roofs that I can attend to, you know, just this area is very dense. You know, same thing if you go to, you know, New York City or Washington, D.C., or even out on the West Coast, if you go to, you know, Los Angeles, or for you guys in Texas and Florida. I mean, there's just certain markets that are just, you know, until you start really going on Google Maps, and now I enjoy flying a lot more than when I used to, because now every time the plane takes off or every time the plane is landing, I'm just like, oh, man, there's just so much, you know, commercial roofing opportunities here. How come we don't have a representative in, you know, Phoenix or whatever? And what the hell is going on? We need to get more proactive about, you know, getting the people informed. And I just get so excited about this stuff. And again, as you grow with your business, it completely changes the way you think and what you observe. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience all around.
Yeah, and I think you really hit the nail on the head, you know, talking about how to be organized, because there's many great contractors out there, and they never learn how to become organized and duplicate what they're doing, because I've heard many, many guys share their stories on how they build a successful company but never learned how to duplicate. Then they had to downsize because they had so much stress and headaches from people doing bad work. As long as they only ran one crew and they were always on the jobs, they never had any issues. But as soon as they started, you know, duplicating what they were trying to do, they would have problems. So they mm-hmm. thought their solution was just, you know, keeping the business small, which may be the easy way out. But I think if we get good at organizing things and documenting things, we can teach, train, and duplicate exactly what we're doing and create great job opportunities for other individuals. We can just impact a lot of people's lives. We can, yeah, there's just a lot of stuff, that positive things that can happen if we are organized. It does take discipline, it does take effort, but in the end, it's worth the time.
Right, and that's where, you know, you're right on point. Actually, Michael Gerber, in his book, I think right in the middle of the book, he talks about that, where people, most small businesses in the U.S., that is exactly what they do. They start saying, hey, you know, how come you're doing this way? Didn't anyone ever teach you that that's not the way we do it here? And then he goes and says, well, you know, never mind, I'll do it myself. And you keep on doing that, and that's not going to fix the problem that you got. The problem is to find out, you know, what you're lacking personally as a leader and become that true entrepreneur, because, you know, life is short, and, you know, you can only work from, I don't know, 14 years old to, I mean, until the day you die, I guess, but, you know, that's not what business is all about. You know, I don't want to be in this position that I am today 5 years from now, and I want my business to work for me versus me work for my business. And that's why, you know, we are putting some tools in place, and we are, you know, there's still, you know, I'll be honest, there's still a lot of things that we have to work out in our company. But I'll tell you, today we are much better than I was 3 years ago. Today I'm much better than I was last year. Next year I'm going to be better than I am today. And the only reason we're doing that is because I'm associating myself with like-minded people who want to be, you know, at that higher level. And again, I don't want to mean offense to those guys that want to go out and operate one single crew. That's fine. But if you want to do that and you want to, you know, do really, really good, just by putting some really basic organization stuff, you'll really find that, hey, for your own personal self, it's going to be peace of mind. You know, when you have that checklist, and I laugh about this, I said, man, I wish I had this thing 6 months ago when I was up on that roof doing some metal coating. If you had a checklist that says, hey, we're going to go out and do a metal roof, you know, do I have metal snips? Do I have my bits for the screw heads? Do I have the right length screws that I need? Do I have, you know, enough quick cog? Do I have an extra dispenser for the quick cog? Do I have an extra that? Man, I can tell you, 6 months ago, I probably did 3 or 4 runs to the local hardware store because I was just missing some basic stuff. Now we've developed a checklist, so now when my guys go, they can pack the trailer the night before. We have a guy that just does the tool organization. He packs the trailer the night before. The foreman gets to the job. He says, oh, man, this is the best thing in the world. All my tools that I need are right here. They got the right screws. They got everything. They go to work. Now I just spent, you know, $20-$30 for that tool person that's in my shop getting this trailer ready. But now the foreman, with the three people that are on site,
I'm saving, you know, probably $70. If I pay him $35 an hour, I'm saving $70 for him to go out to the local hardware store and buy some stuff. And then the three guys that are on the job site, you know, if the foreman is not there, I can pretty much tell you that they're probably not going to be very proactive. So, you know, they might make seem like they're doing something for an hour and a half while he's out running, getting a set of pliers or whatever, but they're not being as proactive as they can be. But when you make that simple list of just the tools that you're going to need, and you have that thing, and you slap it on the trailer, and you say, hey, tomorrow we're going to go do this thing, are all the tools in place? You'll find out that extra hour or two on the day before just getting ready for that job is going to save you hundreds of dollars. And when you do that in a, you know, in a big sense, and you could save $100 every single day for the next 365 days, well, I mean, that's, what, $36,000. So right there, you save some good money just by organizing stuff. So there's no problem being that one guy with two or three guys, but when you're that one guy and you're really, really organized and you show the people that you're really, really organized, you'll get to find out that the people that want to work for you, they're going to have your same mentality. They're going to want to be just as organized as you are, and they're going to show all that stuff, and they're going to show that workmanship. They're going to show that pride, and you're just going to have such a wonderful experience doing what you want to do that you're going to want to go to work every single day. So
exactly.
The question is, where do you want your business to be, and where do you want to be personally? If you want to work in your business for the next 20 years, great. I wish the best luck for you. But if you want to say, hey, I really want 6 months from now to take a vacation for a month and I don't want my phone call to ring and I want to personally feel that things back home are okay and my business is going off fine, the question is, what do you need to do today to make sure that that happens 6 months from now? And that's a very drastic thing. I wouldn't expect for anyone to make something that in 6 months you're going to achieve those results, but it's the same thing. If you don't take some actions, you know, continuously and start to plan some things today, you know, 6 months from now you're going to be like, well, here I am again. You know, we're in the middle of summer and I'm still here chasing around, you know, pliers and, you know, nipples for my connectors and my sprayer is having this issue. You know, everything is all about planning and, you know, planning your life, planning your business, planning everything. You know, it's just a different way of life, I would say. So,
yes, it is. It is. I really like what you just said there. It's because I have been there myself in my business here in Ohio. And maybe I didn't. I'm not sure if I introduced myself. This is Phil Helmuth with 5-Star Waterproofing. I'm also one of the choice roof contractors here from Ohio, and I have kind of the opposite problem. I have a lot of other competition that is maybe in the similar industry, and even into coding some contractors, and they're trying to be cheap. You know, they have the mentality that, you know, if you can somehow undercut each other, you know, you're the one that gets the job. And I've kind of In trying to attract the right people, we didn't talk a lot about that tonight, and I think that's something that we should maybe have a call on, maybe here sometime soon, is how to attract the right kind of people to your business. I just have a little something I'd like to share. A couple days ago, I was kind of discouraged in my business because I've really struggled in you know, attracting the right kind of people that think the way I think. And I had something here happen recently in my business where I saw there may be a need sometime in the next 2 years for me actually to relocate to actually another state. And because I care about my customers, I knew that I would have to take drastic action to attract the right kind of people who could, that would allow me to relocate to another location where I could, you know, have someone essentially take on from where I left off, take care of my customers, and it would keep me going so that I could start like a new location, basically running off of my, you know, current business that I have. And, you know, trying to figure that out, how to attract the right kind of people. And I decided in my mind that I'm only going to, you know, hire a certain kind of person. And I decided what that's going to be, and I stuck with that. And I've been amazed at some of the resumes that I've recently gotten. Is just kind of like, you know, I've decided in my mind that this is the kind of people that I'm going to attract. And I met two guys this evening. I had two interviews with two guys that absolutely seemed to fit the bill from 1 to 10 on exactly the kind of guys that I want. And now I can't make up my mind which one I want to hire, so I may have to hire both of them. So, which that's a good problem to have. So, yeah, I'm very excited, and I believe that if we have the right mindset and we stick to it and we stick to our goals, other people will appreciate our vision and our passion, and they're going to be attracted to us because they want to take their life to another level. If they really don't care, if they're not willing to sacrifice some maybe personal things for what they can obtain long term, depending on what kind of structure you set up for them, they're not really that person that can really see long term. Because depending on what kind of structure you set up for them, the reward may not be at the beginning. It may be at the end of the road. And a lot of people that have this, lottery ticket mindset, they can't see into that. I interviewed one individual this morning that was telling me in the beginning of the interview that, oh, I'm the guy. I've got all the experience. I can do sales. I can do anything. And at the end of the interview, he was like, I may be better off by this weekend. I'm hoping that I'll win the Powerball. And I knew right then and there that this guy has got a lottery ticket mindset. He's got like his hand held out wide open. He's like, someone is going to, one day I'm going to get lucky. And, there's a good chance that that person is never really going to be successful because he's not looking to himself and being willing to really develop personally to become the person he wants to be.
So that's awesome. I appreciate you sharing the input. And just like you're saying, that is key right there, connecting with the right individuals. What I would say is, and I mentioned this in my December call, is make sure that you write down exactly what the job functions for this individual is. And what I tell all the guys when I bring them in and our administrative staff is, this is the vision for our company. This is where we want to be, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. When you do that, people are much more motivated to say, hey, I'm not here just working a job, putting down some roof coatings. I'm really making an improvement in, business owners, and this company is going to grow to something huge, and I'm going to be part of this great thing. That's the American vision. It's that vision that is no longer there. People just want to go and have the job, but the job has no vision. It's a dead-end job. When you have people that are excited about what you're doing and, just like you're saying, you're amazed that when you start searching for the people that you know that you need, they just magically appear into your place, and you're like, well, I've been doing this all wrong. And, those people were always there. It's not your fault. You just didn't make that change in your mind to say, hey, this is what I need to hire by, and, this is what I need to do my job descriptions as, and this is the type of people I want working for me. And, again, when you lay that out, it's just I'm really happy to hear more for your results, and I'm sure this
and
year will
I
be a great
actually,
year for you with the change you're making.
Yeah, I might actually share this with, for the sake of everybody on the call, but I think if you figure out what you want and you know how, to word it basically for what you're looking for, there's an online basically a job finder thing that you can use to kind of advertise on, and it seems to bring in some pretty good people. I just was talking with another individual today. He's got a neighboring business to mine, and he's like kind of like bragging about, he's really got some quality candidates here, and he had this big file. I mean, big file, but there were probably 40 resumes in there. And he goes, yeah, look at this. And he pulls out a resume. And he's a good friend of mine, so he knew I wasn't going to go, try to figure out the guy's name or the phone number and, try to take the guy from him. So he showed me his resume and showed that he worked for a company, showed pretty exceptional results, and showed he stuck with the company for 15 years. And he likes hiring people, that have got a, long track record with the, same company. And then I tried to get out of him how he got these leads. And he kind of squawked around and didn't really want to say. And he said, oh, well, these other people kind of took care of this, you know, they were the ones that advertised and just kind of wanted to, and I figured it could be this, the place I'm using. So I kept probing a little bit, and then he finally came out and said that they're using Indeed. Have you ever heard of Indeed, Max?
Yes, I have. I was, you know, used to be when I was a sole draft person, I was actually on there myself, and I used to get some job leads on that as well.
Yeah,
so,
and it seems,
you know,
it seems a lot of people.
Time.
Yeah, a lot of people use that, and I've kind of been impressed because actually I've got some gotten some really good resumes off of that. So I would encourage anybody in our group, if you're looking for some quality candidates in your area, I would try Indeed.
Awesome. So I appreciate the input. And like you're saying, I had the same, once you start connecting with those people, you know, we recently hired that girl that was an administrator staff, and I interviewed like three other individuals, and this girl came in, and I mean, she was talking to me about all this stuff, SQL, SEO, research stuff, and marketing stuff. And I just said, wow, you know, I can hire this girl to do all the administrative stuff, but, you know, that's not what her, you know, that's not her passion. Her passion is the marketing side. Her passion is, you know, doing the whole thing, the online research, doing that stuff. And then I said, okay, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to retain this girl and say, hey, look, you know, I'm sorry we decided to hire another administrative assistant, but you have these great things. We're going to be putting a market plan in action in about March. So let me give you a call back in February. And she really appreciated my honesty. She said, look, I love the way that you said it to me, because the last thing I would want is to come in and just be doing paperwork and doing organization and doing all this other stuff. But then if I find, you know, another job, you know, and she'd like to see, because I told her, hey, you know, we're expecting to be a $50 million company in the next 5 years, and this is how we're going to get there. And she saw that, you know, we have that vision, we have that drive, we are going to get there. It's a question of when, it's not a question of if. And when she sees that, she says, wow, well, you know, this individual really cares about his employees, and he really wants to bring in the right people to grow the company. You know, again, you just start to see, and sometimes you'll connect with the individual and they might not be the right person for that job, but maybe if they really have all those other things, you might, again, you know, once you started talking to me about all these marketing stuff and all these blogs and all this other stuff, you know, don't forget, Conklin has this whole other side of business with the network marketing. I mean, sometimes you connect to individuals that they might not be the right fit for your roofing company, but maybe they are just exactly what you need to give you that little push and go out and prospect and go out and network with individuals and go out and set up accounts for new contractors and give them the same opportunities that you have. So it's just, again, when you start searching for things that you think that you need, you connect with some amazing people and ideas just open up. So I really appreciate you sharing that, Phil.
Yep, that's quite all right. Yeah, it's awesome when you start networking. The restaurant that I met these two guys at, there's other people coming in, they're sitting down and they're trying to eavesdrop, and there's these one, two dudes, they sit there and they look at you and they're like, boy, we've seen this guy before, and they were trying to eavesdrop, so we try to keep our voices down, and then the guys came over and come to find out it was somebody I knew, and they want to do more networking later, and then some other people want to know who you are, and you start talking to them and take an interest in them, and they're like giving you their information, saying, hey, we want to talk with you some more because we have another business opportunity over here. And it's just, when you get out and network with people, it's just, you know, I used to think, Max, that people are your best investment. And the other night, I was listening, there's this audio that I would encourage all you guys to listen to, and it's actually a research and study that was done on what takes a company from just being mediocre or good in their field and takes them to great. And basically they took companies that were just mediocre and they went to being an awesome company that was four times better than other companies in their same field. And they had to retain that same success for 15 straight years. And they spent millions of dollars in research, and they have some very, very valuable information in that audio. I think you can get the book or audio, and I downloaded it. It's called Good to Great, and it is really awesome. in trying to find what they call a level 5 leader, because your level 4 leader is maybe more of a charismatic, more of a, you know, maybe an outspoken guy that's maybe not a dictator, but he'll set up, he has many great visions and ambitions, and everybody looks to him, you know, and he's a great leader, but he's maybe one great leader with 1,000 helpers. And where if you learn what a level 5 leader is, he actually is someone who maybe doesn't create as much show, but he actually creates an environment where other people can really grow, and actually sets it up so that the people after him will succeed more than what he did. And it'll actually, it sets companies up where if something happens to the, you know, CEO or whoever's in charge, that there's an executive team that can, I guess there's some very interesting history on Wells Fargo. And Wells Fargo actually, for a while, lost some of their employees to Bank of America that was going under. And it was due to Wells Fargo employees that actually saved Bank of America. And it's pretty crazy on some of the tactics that Wells Fargo used. And some of them seemed almost brutal. Some of the rigorous tactics that they held their employees to and their company. But people knew why they were there for. And if they didn't fit that picture, they said, look, we are robbing you of... If you're scared of what we're doing and you're scared to go out and really, you know, take a hold and make happen what you need to make happen, maybe you need to find a different company where you can enjoy yourself and love what you're doing. If we keep you here and you're just here because you're scared of going somewhere else, we're basically robbing you of happiness or you blossoming where you would fit in best. So they would encourage young people to actually leave and go somewhere else. And they had some amazing stuff happen, and I just found it really, really inspiring. I haven't even gotten through the complete audio, but there's some awesome stuff that I've learned in there, and that, again, is called Good to Great. And I would encourage everybody to listen to that. It is in really getting out there and attracting the right people. I think it's a big key, because hiring the right people, it's like they said, it's not as important, you know, focusing on where the bus is going to go, but to get the right people on the bus and the right people in the right seats, then you can focus on where you want to go and you will accomplish some amazing stuff. And that's why the author brings out that people are not your best investment, but the right people are. And I feel that is a very key thing in helping our Choice Roof Contractor Group in growing to the next level. It's not about explosive growth and bringing 50,000 contractors on board. It's about attracting the right individuals to work with so we can mastermind together and move the Choice Roof Contractor bus to some unbelievable destinations.
Well, Phil, I'm sure that you're bringing tears to Jonathan's eyes. I mean, this I think has been Jonathan's and Sam's vision for a long time. And, you know, people like you are really the better part of this team that really bring us together and share the whole vision. So I guess with this, we'll take any other questions, but I'm going to sign off. I will just add one note, you know, just we can talk about these phone calls and we can share about these great results, but you know, put the whatever your changes that you want to make, put them into place and start acting on them. Because until you do, until you change your mindset, until you change what you've been doing that hasn't been working out for you, and you start to investigate other things, you know, unless you put it into action, you're just going to be exactly where you are. You're going to have all this good information, but you're not going to know what to do with it. Take a chance, you know, move with the information, you know, spend that extra 20 minutes a day at your shop, or, you know, before you watch your favorite TV program, just spend it on the couch and do a little writing in your, you know, booklet, whatever, sheet of paper, whatever, planning some stuff out, planning your jobs, planning your company, you know, planning your marketing. And again, connect with individuals that can answer those questions that you have, and Again, just act on it, act on it, act on it. And I can guarantee you that even though the result might not be exactly what you expect number-wise, but you will find out that the result that you're going to get is just going to be so much better, and it's going to bring so much, you know, happiness to you. You're going to say, wow, you know, this whole problem with hiring, you know, unfortunate individuals that have some habits of, you know, whether it be alcohol or drugs and, you know, losing tools or my customers not being happy, whatever it is that's going bad in your business, you'll find out that step by step, the more action you take, the more things you filter out, the better you work on those items that are affecting your business negatively right now, you know, the more positive change you will have in the future. And like Phil said, it's not a, this is not a lottery, you know. Yeah, you hit the lottery with, you know, Conklin and Choice Food Contractor Group with all the support and all the great products that we have to offer. But, you know, the hard news is you're not going to go out and tomorrow sell that $1 million roof. You know, it's going to take time, years, and experience in order to get those large projects. And, you know, the team is there to help you out. We're all here to help each other. And, you know, we can share these marketing information and stuff like that. And, again, just keep on sharing what's working for you, and let's bring 2016 the best year for Choice Food Contracting Group.
Hey, man, thanks, Max.
Sounds awesome. Thank you so much for doing this, Max. I do think we probably should end the call unless there's someone with a last-minute question. Looks like we're good. Well, have a great night, and thanks all for participating. I think this was one of our best calls yet, and Max, you always present it so well, and I know you put a lot of time preparing for these calls, and it clearly shows.
Well, I appreciate it. We'll do the following. I'll be back, so probably not the first week in February, but probably the second one, so whatever Tuesday that is, most likely, I think, looks like February 9th. So we'll investigate a few topics. Maybe we'll do a little forum. I would like to maybe look more into the whole thing about attracting the right people to your business and read up some more information, and maybe if we can take that as a topic on the next one, maybe
sure.
We could split up a couple of things there. So on that note, I'll be signing off. Enjoy your night, gentlemen, and have a good year.